It is Saturday, the 18th of September, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Tan Geek Speak, geek news, and your questions and comments about technology. Welcome to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We're bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host. And please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today in the air with me are Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, and Al Luckow. Let's go around the table real quick just to get your voices tuned in to our ears, if you will. First, Ben Jaffe is a freelance media guy and Stanford instructor. Good morning, Ben.
How's it going, Lyle?
Quite well, thank you. And Al Luckow is a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everybody.
That means you're a designer, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Many meetings.
I say it all the time, but... And Mr. Miles Elam, programmer and political junkie. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're mostly doing Java and JavaScript right now?
Yes.
Bouncing back and forth between the server and client?
Yep, mostly doing client stuff, client-side stuff, but
Is it a big company you work for? Have I heard of it?
Big in terms of revenue, big in terms of number of people, which are...
I don't know. Is it a...
Tell you what, the company is Katera Technologies.
Nope, it's not big.
Okay.
Arbitrary insulting.
Okay. Yeah, that is.
But, I like small companies.
Yeah?
I think small companies are great.
Yeah, to work for a smaller company is much better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Better than a big company. Speaking of big companies and working for them, the story that I'm covering this week has to do with a lawsuit to Google for kind of forcing certain things to be on their operating system for the phones. So Google has the Android operating system, which is kind of talked about in the world as a open source and free OS to use. So Apple's OS that is on their Apple their phones and the iPad and such is very restricted on what you can do and what you can do with it, and you can only install it on certain devices, and there's a strict policy around that. And Android kind of has that reverse, or Google has that reverse policy on Android, or at least that's the conception of from geeks. So, Ben, you've got an Android
perception.
Phone, right? Perception, thank you.
Yeah.
Did I say conception?
Yeah.
Well, maybe, okay, I'm not going to try to argue that one. I lose. One down for Lyle today. And the argument really has to do, it's coming from Skyhook, the lawsuit, and Skyhook is a location service company. And so all these smartphones have location services, and they're GPS, but lots of times they're also Wi-Fi and other services. So you can do receiving of data through the radio, through GPS, through Wi-Fi points, and you can kind of triangulate your location. And Google's pretty good at this. I've got an iPhone, and on roads, it's really good. How is the Android for this kind of location?
It's also very good with that, yeah.
And that's using Google's location service as well.
Mm-hmm.
So early on, Skyhook was the company that could do this. And now Apple does it and Google does it. And in Google kind of taking over the market share of their phone's location service, they're kind of kicking out Skyhook. And Skyhook, of course, is litigating. That kind of happens when these kind of things occur. But the thing that's interesting to note is that the way that Google is doing it is the same type of closed, restricted rule sets that most software and large companies have. You know, it's not a matter of whether they're doing something wrong or not. It's appropriate for their business, probably. But the question is it unfair to others? And Google's got a lot of leverage in this market. You know, the search engine, for example, but the advertising revenue that comes in from the phone is all wrapped up in a public document, but also a private document, which we don't know much about, which are signed by every carrier. So anyway, it's one of those situations where I don't necessarily know if Google's doing something wrong in the situation. We don't know. There's a lawsuit out there. We're going to see at first Skyhook looking like they're fighting a big giant, and later on we might see Skyhook like SCO, where it's just kind of an annoying lawsuit company. That's all it's got.
Well, the thing was that Skyhook was on the droid, the Motorola mm-hmm. droid. They were going to ship it. Google calls up Motorola and says, hey, stop shipping this. You're using the wrong mapping service. You should be using Google's mapping service, not Skyhook. And
right.
Google's using their power because Motorola is using this
location service, not the mapping
Android
service.
OS that's supposedly this open source OS, and Google's saying, no, you've got to use all our branded apps.
Right, and right now Google hasn't responded publicly, of course, because it's a lawsuit, and mm-hmm. Skyhook is saying that what Google is doing is against this document policy that's signed. Ben, you're saying?
Yeah, that is a misconception, though. The Android OS is not an open source application. It is open sourced after it's released, so you can make changes if you want. But what's on your phone is not an open source operating system for you to do whatever you want to.
No, I get that. But
then the other thing is that the Android OS, when it's made open source, And then, you know, it can be used by different carriers to do whatever. And that's what Skyhook, as I understand it, is arguing, is that Google is pressuring carriers to take
certain
the Android
services.
OS when they bundle it for their own phones on their network, use Google instead of Skyhook. That's the argument
that's the
that
argument,
I see.
Yeah.
However, it's not the entire operating system and all the apps that are open sourceable.
Right.
It's just the operating system and maybe a couple of the apps. But things like Google Maps and some of the other Google applications are not actually open source.
Right. And the argument that Skyhook is making is that, you know, Google's using power and kind of hiding behind this. No, we're open and free. And mm-hmm. so it's just a clarity that, no, it's a business and it's trying to make money.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also the other issue, devil's advocate here, of one of the main issues in the uptake of Android is the fact that the market is fracturing.
Right.
That you have different devices that have different resolutions and different powers and different versions of the operating system as well. And so I could see that as being we want everything to be more uniform as a push at the same time.
Well,
I don't agree with the decision that
there is a compliance definition document that's a Google document that you have to comply with if you're going to use the Android OS on your network. And that compliance definition document, the people that translate that and decide what is appropriate and what's not appropriate are Google employees. And that's another one of those situations where it's, you know, it's a complicated space. It's not like this is a real black and white issue. It's there's a lot of complexity. So mm-hmm. the question really comes down to, it's really, I mean, I think what Skyhook's doing by saying, hey, this is unfair to us, you're being monopolistic, what we should take back from it is not necessarily that, yes, they're being monopolistic in this point, but that what Google is doing, what, you know, Apple does, should be looked at in the same light. It shouldn't just be like, well, everything's okay because it's Google. Mm-hmm. You really should be dissecting everything they're doing from the perspective it's a business and they're trying to make money.
Or not so much because it's Google, but let's not accept it just because it happens to work for me right now.
Right, let's which say, is the same thing we should say about Apple products, right? We shouldn't just be saying, you know, I use an iPhone because I like it, but I'm trading off some of what I, you know, some control for it. And you should be very aware of that situation.
Yeah, with regard to maps, I see it very much as the debate with regard to browsers.
With
browsers, mm-hmm. it's a difference between saying you must use Internet Explorer versus you must use something that can read and parse HTTP stuff over HTTP and be able to parse HTML and make things according to these specs that have been
clear, the lawsuit does not have to do with mapping service. It has to do with location service. So it's subtle, but a mapping service is actually translation to a map in the location is where you are.
They are somewhat intertwined, though.
Yes, sir.
Because at least what I've understood from what I've read, using the Google Maps application and the Gmail application and things like that, because those aren't the same as the operating system, which is open sourced and then you can do with it what you want, I think it is somewhat legitimate, at least legally, in my non-legal expertise opinion, for Google to say, hey, we're using Google services, Google location services for Google Maps, maybe because they don't want to build an API to work with it.
Here's an interesting thing. We'll close this up with this thought. Skyhook claims in the filing that Google was okay with Android devices shipping with Skyhook's XPS, which is the location service that Skyhook provides, as long as Google's own location service were also running alongside it. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's interesting is that Google, here's the quote from the claim from Skyhook. Google knew that if Google's location service is collecting local data on the same device at the same time as XPS, that's the Skyhook stuff, that will enable Google to collect more and better location data because Skyhook's accuracy and precision. So one of the things that they're saying is, you know, Google's kind of piggybacking on our technology and getting our information by forcing both services to be on the phone at the same time.
And who actually knows if that's true without
looking
at it?
Right, that's just part of the
claimant. Yeah.
Of course, Google's not responding because it's an open lawsuit. Okay, you know, that was me blabbing on. Let's
go
on to something more fun. Al, you got something fun?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that we're all familiar with Legos.
Isn't the definition of fun?
I mean, we've all played with Legos, and they're
a lot
of fun.
At least I used to before they were $20 billion a brick.
I know, man. You know what? They've always been expensive. When I was a kid, I only had like a small amount because Legos were considered sort of an expensive toy. They kind of always been more expensive than you would think, even though they're attainable. Well, that aside, there is an application that you can go and get. It's on a website called designbyme.lego.com, which is a Lego company. And it's called Digital Designer. And you're able to download it for free. And it works on Mac and PC. And what it does is it gives you access to the entire library of all the Lego pieces that are available. Every kind of little weird corner and slanted thing and wheel. And so now you have all these Legos available, and you can kind of it's sort of like when you drag the piece into the viewing frame, it's got like a magnetic thing, so they click together really easily, you know.
Okay.
So you can build your own things virtually. You can make your own projects. You can decide to make a fire engine. You have the entire library available to you. So basically the entire experience of Lego is available for free.
Except
you don't get the tactile.
Except for the tactile, yeah. Right.
But which is actually part of the fun of it, obviously. But this whole thing is right here. And then when you're done, if you decide, and this thing is in 3D too, by the way, you can build it and then spin it around, and mm-hmm. there's even some rudimentary.
It's a whole 3D modeling application their blocks.
It's quite good. And by the way, it only works on Intel Macs. It doesn't work on PowerPCs, but and also Windows and Vista and all that stuff. Once you're done, you can say, all right, let me buy all these pieces, and you can buy the entire
just the ones you use,
just the pieces that you use to make your fighter jet. I have a friend, my friend Mark Auerbach, lives in Oregon. He just really started getting into doing these Lego projects, and he built this fighter jet, and it's got little wheels that come down, the retractable wheels, and you can see inside the air intakes and all these kinds of things, and it's built this big thing. And he's just really started getting into building these things.
He's got a complete model. And did he order it and get the parts and everything?
He did check to see how much it would cost.
it's a little pricey.
It costs money to buy these pieces. And we had a discussion earlier. Does it cost more than buying the pieces individually? Well, if you were to buy pieces individually, you probably have to buy packs of them. But, so you have to buy
that's
more.
The interesting thing is you can really get that one little bendy joint. Okay, here's a question that's totally relevant and really important. Miles, what's your favorite Lego piece? Like when you were a kid, what was the one you really wanted more of or you were looking for?
Wings.
You are always short on wings. Mm-hmm. What kind of wings? Do you like the longer wing or that kind of short, stubby wing?
Actually, just the variation. Probably the longer one.
Yeah.
The
I liked using the longer ones to make the nose of the ship. Right, two longer ones make a really good nose.
Oh, I was making them because I wanted to have like a Delta V wing.
Okay.
A Mirage jet.
Al, your favorite Lego piece?
I was, to tell you the truth, I was always losing wheels.
Wheels,
It would always be like, I need to have more wheels because I could make two, planes.
All right.
Instead of just one with one wheel.
Sure.
You
were making planes with wheels, though.
Well, I was making things, they were, they had to roll.
Okay. So rolling things.
I want to change my answer. Hinges.
Hinges. You can't change your answer. Yeah. Wings. Ben, what do you got for your favorite Lego piece?
You guys are geeks.
What are Legos?
His answer is hinges.
Actually, that really would be my answer.
Yeah, like
hinges or wheels.
I always wanted to get enough hinges so that I could turn the Lego piece upside down. I could have bumps on both sides.
Actually, I might be thinking of Kinects, but gears. Like, I never had the right size gear.
That's not a Lego thing.
I know, but I'm talking about Kinects.
What are you?
Well, the other thing...
I'm a geek.
The other thing that's really neat about this design by me thing is that once you're done, you can have a poster made of your object, and it takes a high-resolution image and then gives you three views in the bottom, and it's just designed by me.
So this would be really cool
It also sends you the instructions on how to build it.
So if you had, if you want to give a really cool gift to somebody, right, you could go take pictures of their house or like their family home or something, mm-hmm. and go and build this 3D model thing and then give that to them. They get a poster and they get a whole kit where they can house.
That'd be cool because then cool. Obviously it doesn't come built. So
right.
you can say, here's your house. I got your house. Here's the instructions,
and everything.
Your poster. That's not a bad gift. And I think you had mentioned too, if you were like doing a fundraiser or something, you could like build the school and people could buy, but it's kind of a really neat marketing idea where they're giving away the software for free. The software is kind of fun to use by itself. I mean, if you don't buy anything, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun. I went in there and tried to build a robot it's a pretty neat thing. And when you look at some of the other stuff that people have built, it's quite impressive. I mean, people are really getting into this whole Lego thing, and the other thing that's kind of good about Legos is that they've kind of moved back to their traditional Lego design as opposed to in the 90s.
For a while, they were making all these puffy things.
They were making weird, like, super space things, you know, and people just didn't like it. And then they moved back to the traditional.
You're talking about Lego pieces that are like, they have three little pieces that you can plug in.
Right.
And then the rest of it's just this giant sculpture of plastic.
Yeah, exactly. And
that doesn't count.
And kids really like Legos that look like Legos,
You know, I was at the county fair on Thursday with the third grade class that my son is in, and one of the rooms was a collection of kids' collection stuff, just tons of stuff, and there was tons of Legos. It was so great to see, and of course, it was competitive, so you had a model of certain things, and there was prizes and stuff. I really, take your kids to the county fair. It's a blast. I think it's probably over now. No, it's probably this weekend as well.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Speaking of Legos,
so those that link will be up on geekspeak.org too for people.
Speaking of Legos, the animation that I showed you guys last week privately off air, I just posted that up on the website. So if you want to see a cool animation, what you can do with a good camera work and a lot of free time.
Time lapse using Legos as the modeling form.
Yep.
Yeah, we should change the name of our show.
Yeah, a lot of people do little animations with Legos, like whole like videos and stuff. I've seen music videos, and that must be a lot of work.
Oh, and Star Wars and Legos. Don't forget Star Wars and Legos.
That's true. That alarm is actually, we've been going on for almost 20 minutes now, and we haven't talked about social media. So we need a Twitter or Facebook story. Ben, Facebook story?
I've got a Facebook story. But I don't want to talk about it because Facebook's dumb.
Okay, good. Let's move on.
So, yeah, moving on.
Case closed.
No, I've got a much cooler story. Facebook, privacy, blah, 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 whatever. We cover it every week. And there's not a specific story to cover this week, so I'm not going to talk about Facebook.
Sweet.
Aside from all the time I just spent talking about how I'm not going to talk about Facebook. How's that? There's a tremendous diamond out in the sky to the tune of 10 billion trillion trillion carats, which is really big.
That is really big.
Really big. It actually used to be a star. We just discovered this. Basically, there was this old star. It used to be around the size of our sun. And, of course, over time it faded and it shrunk and it compressed together. And the heart of the star is now this gigantic diamond. And of course, you get diamonds under tremendous heat and tremendous pressure, you get diamonds that
and
pop
large
out.
Amounts of carbon.
Large amounts of carbon. Well, yeah, all of these things present in some stars. And I love this article. This is kind of a mention, but I love this article because of this quote here, which says the diamond star completely outclasses the largest diamond on Earth. The 546 carat Golden Jubilee. Well, of course it outclasses. It's a star. It's huge.
It's larger
so much
than
larger
Earth.
Than Earth. It's 10 billion trillion trillion carats, as opposed to the largest diamond on Earth, which I just said was 546 carats.
That's a big diamond.
It's a big diamond. It's like 10 to the millions.
Wait, is that bigger than Earth?
What's that?
Is that bigger than Earth? Because stars...
500 billion trillion carats?
It's 4,000 kilometers across, so no.
Yeah, one of the reasons why stars are so big is because they're not solid. So once you compress something down to be a solid mass, it's going to be smaller in volume. But, density will probably be up there.
So this is only 50 light years away. So if we...
Here's a question.
If we figure out how to travel at 90% the speed of light, then you can go out and get this for your sweetheart and
you can go get it.
Come
it's
back
4,000 kilometers wide.
Somehow it loses
its. Put it in my pocket.
when you have a diamond that big, it sort of makes all the others. It just somehow you lose something.
Diamonds are useless now, right?
Yeah, it makes them very common.
Try putting this thing on your finger. It's got a gravity pull.
You guys can all share that diamond out, and I'll take the 500 carat one.
Yeah. Any physics geeks out there listening? If you could email us or send us a message somehow about what the gravitational attraction would be on a diamond
4,000 diamond.
Yeah, I'm really actually curious
is
about
there,
that.
Is like, the rest of the remainder of the star around this core, or is it just the core?
I mean, I assume there's something around it.
Because
you
wouldn't
slight...
be able to see 4,000.
It's a giant gold band around it.
No, I'm sure there's some stuff around it. It's primarily diamond. It's
God is getting married.
Your humongous diamond. And also, it says that this diamond is the biggest one in the galaxy, which...
You don't know that.
I think that that's kind of indicative of this being popular science news reporting. It's actually on the BBC, which usually has pretty good science reporting. And that's a pretty innocuous comment, but I'm sure that there are plenty more that are... just as large, if not larger, because this happens apparently relatively often to white dwarfs. So
okay, so now I'm off on a tangent here. If you had a gold band around it, would that actually work? I know that gold is more dense mm-hmm. per volume than carbon is, but what about a diamond, which is a carbon lattice that's much more fixed, more compressed than your typical atomic gold? I don't know, or is it? That's the question. Like, I'm actually curious. I want someone to email us to or call in and give us that answer. I really want to know if that diamond star could mm-hmm. have a gold band, or if the gold would end up precipitating toward the center.
I love this show. This is a fun show to be on.
Okay, yeah, I kind of want to know too.
Yeah, me too. Okay, moving on. I actually really want to know if you could
I guess
maintain,
I could just look that up. I could
like
figure
if,
out
if,
what
if
the...
you could maintain your muscle mass while walking around on this huge diamond. Like, does it have enough of gravity pull? Is it like near 1G or is it like
no,
10
I'm,
Gs or is
I'm
it
I'm sure it's like it has
G.
enough gravity pull to for us not to float away.
Well, not yeah, certainly not to float away, but I mean, like, would we be able to live on this diamond if we, you know,
right, as how is a diamond core compare with an iron, mostly iron core, which
yeah,
the Earth has?
I mean, also the rest of Earth, right? The density of Earth versus the density of this, of
do
this
you think,
star.
Do you think people living on a diamond core planet would feel superior to those on a iron core planet?
No, they'd probably be like giving their married, their loved ones iron rings.
Okay,
you know.
No, I was thinking along the lines of they'd be really unpleasant to be around because, you know,
all snooty.
They're just harder.
Yeah. Harder.
Harder personalities. Yeah.
There's a great sci-fi novel that talks about finding a giant diamond mountain on a local planet and how it changes the world. And all I can think of is Neal Stephenson's Diamond Age book, which is not the right book, even though it says Diamond Age.
Devaluing the diamond because there's so much more diamond.
No, the amount of the book's a little bit, it's about a lot of things, but and this isn't the Diamond Age book, but I can't remember who it is. So if you're a geek and know this sci-fi novel I'm talking about, call up and let us know. But the
people usually call in to ask us questions, and we're just like going out to the population saying, yeah.
You can only call today to give us information.
That'd be
but
really
no, what happens, of course, is that you all of a sudden have this tons of material to build new things. So space elevator becomes available and possible because we have a lot of diamond.
Really? It's heavy, though.
No,
well, diamond is the strongest substance on Earth, naturally occurring substance on Earth, I think. But I might be completely
that.
Wrong.
I think there's others.
I'm probably completely wrong, but it's really, really strong. Like, we build saw blades out of it to cut really,
hard.
Really hard things. It's really hard. It's difficult to break.
Here's a question, Ben. Is there a difference between hard and strong?
Oh, jeez.
But let's move
on. I'll think about it. But I do want to say that the space elevator, I know that we were looking at all of these different kinds of alloys and nanotubes and whatever. And last time I checked, we're not quite there yet. We're not quite to the point where we can build something. Basically, a string is what we're building, a really long string that's or rope that's so long that it actually its mass becomes really if you ever picked up a huge thing of rope, you know, it's very heavy. So even if you have a very, very lightweight, very, very strong thing, it'll actually collapse under its own weight if you're trying to build a space elevator up to an
all right.
geosynchronous
I call tangent on you. All right, moving on.
wait, why did I get tangent? Yes. Miles started this.
You got the space elevator.
And all I'm right. actually going to answer a question because I was just looking
Please
up the density of diamond per volume as opposed mm-hmm. to gold.
Mm-hmm.
And at one atmosphere at 25 degrees C, diamond has a density of 3.5 grams per cubic centimeter. So
gold's got to be heavier than
gold, 19.3 yeah. grams per cubic centimeter, which means
but
that,
of course you
that a diamond star or star yeah. remnant could not have a gold band. It would have a gold center.
What if you put the gold band after the diamond was formed?
Yeah, you're assuming that it would fall through the diamond. The
yes.
diamond's not a liquid form.
What
though?
If it was white gold?
It isn't, but diamond is...
That would have been the 80s.
While diamond is hard, it is also very brittle. Over time, with that large a mass, you would have a
cracking.
Shifting, yeah, a shifting of and
sure.
repositioning.
What if it was a really wide gold band? A lot of surface area.
This is why you don't have geeks for dinner, by the way.
All right. Yeah, imagine what our dinners with each other are
oh,
like.
Man. Yeah,
oh,
and we
God.
Don't taste very good.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, and Al Luckow. We're talking about diamonds. Geek Speak.
All right, Lyle's lost it. This happens once every couple of years.
Geekspeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer electronic parts.
Do you need me to read that? Here. Okay, Geekspeak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
This is KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, Santa Cruz, 88.9 FM. KUSP co-sponsors the 2010 Alzheimer's Memory Walk, a day of fun and remembrance for families, friends, and caregivers dealing with Alzheimer's every day. Registration begins at 8:30 a.m. and the walk begins at 10 on Saturday, September 25th at the Seascape Resort and Park in Aptos. Information and registration is available at 800-272-3900 or online at alz.org/memorywalk. alz.org/memorywalk. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio. We're taking your calls and questions on Geekspeak today. You can ask us anything you'd like, but we'd prefer you to tell us something. The phone numbers are 800-655-5877. Again, that's toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, if you're local to the 831 area code, you're welcome to just pick up your phone and dial less numbers, 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Miles, what's going on with HDCP?
Headache. HDCP, for those who don't know,
like me,
is the protocol used between high definition players and display engines. So, example, a Blu-ray player and a TV, or a Blu-ray player and a AV receiver that has HDMI connections, uh-huh, and then over to a TV. And one of the things about it is that you can't just make any device have an HDMI cable and then plug them together and everything works hunky-dory. The Motion Picture Association of America and the...
And a few technical
and a few others,
companies,
yeah, yeah, have always referred to something known as the... referred to something as the analog hole, which we have constantly referred to as reality.
And basically, it is if you copy data digitally, at some point it has to get to an analog so that your eyes can see it, because we don't see things in digital.
Right. Yet. To hear sound, you need to vibrate the air, which is an right. analog process. To see
so
images,
if you, own
you
a
have
lot.
To have a wavelength of light, which
right.
is an analog.
So if you own a lot of content, like a motion picture industry, they own a lot of movies, they want to be able to sell them but without letting people copy them. And so when they release a digital DVD, for example, the idea was that it would be encrypted in such a way that if I gave a DVD mile, if I had a DVD, I couldn't copy it and make a digital copy of it and have an exact copy of it.
DVDs aren't really the issue.
But was, what I'm talking yeah. about, this okay. idea that you could do a digital technology. So they add a lot of technology to stop people from doing digital technology, but digital copying. But all the time, at some point, of course, you can put a TV on and have a video camera aimed at the TV and make a copy.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how good a way can you do that? And of course, one way would be to unplug the TV and just plug the output of one device into a recording input of the other device and keep it digital the entire time. And HDCP is supposedly to stop that.
Well, it's an encryption protocol.
Right.
Or it includes an encryption protocol. And the idea is that it would only go to licensed devices. So if you had a signal from a Blu-ray device and it's sending it out, if it detects that there's the item on the other side and the cable that you're connecting to is HDCP compliant, uh-huh, then it goes, oh, okay, here's your high definition 1080p content. If it doesn't detect that, it goes, oh, well, let's put this down to 480i, you know, DVD quality. So even though you bought a Blu-ray player, it's still playing it at DVD quality.
Right.
The HDCP encryption has a master key. And you have to in order to get all the different devices to work together so that the Panasonic key can work with the Toshiba key.
Right. So the idea being that if Panasonic and Toshiba come along and they make devices, and then later on Sony comes along and makes a device, Sony gets a new device, but the other ones can actually read them. So they're all able to communicate together because they're all subsets of one key.
They're all signed from the same source, mm-hmm, in much the same way that you have things signed by VeriSign to talk to
which we won't get
companies.
Into. Directly, right. Okay, go on.
The master key has been cracked.
Oh, no. Interesting. Seems so familiar to me. When did that happen before? Like every time this type of thing tries to
yeah,
work.
Right.
Right.
Every single time.
I mean, the DVD key was cracked.
It's not
ago.
Just like a single vendor. It's not something...
It's all vendors.
which means that you have to make an entirely new master key, and everyone out there would have to buy all new TVs and all new Blu-ray players.
So we're going to be seeing software at some point that can handle this then? Or do you still have to have a hardware device?
You'd need to have, or at least control of the hardware device. So if you have a computer, then conceivably you could, if the hardware supported it, write a driver so that the HDMI would have the handshake.
Right.
And
see, it's so frustrating. This is the reason why people have so much difficulty with HD content, is because of the standard. Like, really, and that's what it feels like.
One of the reasons, yeah.
Right. So you've got outputs and inputs in the back of your TV. And you're like, oh, look at all these cool inputs. You've got RGB and S video and a VGA and a DVI cable and HDMI cable. And you're like, oh, this is cool. I can plug anything I want and get that really good resolution. No. Because the handshaking has to happen, and it starts getting really
complicated. Well, in fairness, it only happens with encrypted content.
Right.
So if you want to make your own content, if you're transcribing from something or transcoding from something else that's your own and copying it over, you can watch that at 1080p. It's not a problem. It's only things that are signed and encrypted, like most Blu-ray movies, that actually put in that limitation.
We need a little bit of backwards in time thing. Anybody? We only not too far, only a few minutes. We forgot the geek bit. Ben, geek bit of the week.
Oh, is that? Am I covering it as a geek bit?
It says Ben has it.
Oh, that was the one I talked to you about. Okay, well,
okay,
I'll just cover it as a geek bit anyway. So there's this conference that all of you guys should go to. It's called Galileo is Wrong. It's an inaugural conference to discuss geocentrism, basically the idea that the Earth is immobile in the center of the universe and everything orbits the Earth. So, there's this thing called science, and, people...
Galileo of Galilee?
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah, that one.
He was wrong?
The Galileo.
I bet he has a lot of wrong qualities.
So apparently...
Don't tell me they're claiming the big one.
So apparently...
I don't even want to hear the story. Go on.
Apparently gravity is not a law. Was that Newton?
Well, gravity's a theory still, right?
Oh. Technically. Galileo kind of described how things would move. Go on. Please tell
basically
me.
Basically, Galileo...
What's the conference, please?
Okay, so the conference is saying that the Earth is indeed the center of the universe.
Man.
Despite all scientific... Actually, no, not despite all scientific evidence. They're saying they have scientific evidence. And they're saying that all the other quote-unquote scientific evidence, saying that the Earth is not the center of the universe, saying that, it goes around the sun and all of that, and this big galaxy that is moving... all of that is wrong, apparently. All of the scientific evidence... this is a joke for anyone who hasn't caught on.
It's interesting history too. I mean, in the 17th century, the early 17th century, Galileo and the Catholic Church start kind of arguing the idea that the Earth's the center and the sun revolves around the Earth.
Yeah, Galileo was part of the Catholic Church. I mean,
He starts arguing with, but it's an internal debate. He's very well respected, and the argument is pretty clearly accepted at this point.
Yeah, he starts looking up at the sky and he says, hey, if the Earth was the center of the universe, this wouldn't move like it's moving, and that wouldn't move like it's moving, and hey, what's Mercury doing going backwards in the sky for a second, and so the Catholic, the Church and everyone kind of came up with all of these apologetics and explanations as to why this was not the case and why the Earth is actually the center. But the more you look at the evidence, and the more the evidence came out, it became very, very clear that the Earth is not the center of the universe. And now we're sending hunks of metal called space probes to different worlds and to the moon and out to
a conference like this, how do people think that, how can they take scientific reasoning and turn it upside down to get to the point where they think that the sun's revolving around the Earth?
Well, just look at the redshift. Everything's moving away from us, so we have to be the source.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's one of those kind of things.
Just like any raisin in any baking bread thinks that all the other raisins are moving away from it, but every raisin thinks that.
Because of Galileo's convictions, he was finally put into house arrest
and excommunicated,
and claimed to be a heresy, which kind of
he declared a heretic and excommunicated.
But he still kept on doing math.
and there's this poll that actually was linked in the same article that I was reading. I found this one on Slashdot, of course, because where else would you find something like this? It turns out that back in, and I don't have the year on me, I think 1999. Yeah, 1999, they did a randomly selected national sample phone interview with about 1,000 adults 18 years and older, and they found that 18% of them think that the sun revolves around the Earth. Or sorry, 18%. Yeah, I got that right. So that's kind of sad, and that's kind of depressing. That like there still actually is a pretty significant portion of the world that thinks that the Earth is the center of the universe. Back in 1999, according to, and this is, of course, there's some error with the way they worded the story, the study and everything like that, but about 18% of Americans, Germans, and Britons think that, or thought that the Earth is the center of the universe. And there's so much evidence weighing against that.
Right, it's really discussion.
Well, a lot of people think they're the center of the universe.
Well, that's true. Well, I mean, the Earth is actually rotating around you.
Yeah.
Al?
Yeah.
Can you talk about fascism, please?
Well, speaking of people being the center of the universe, there is an iPhone app out right now, and it links to a site that's called Fascism, which isn't the fascism you think. It's like fashionism, but it's fascism. And what they do on the site is you send in a picture of yourself in this outfit, and everybody tells you, people, members who join, say, well, I don't think that looks good, or you should wear blue, or that hat's too big and makes your face look big, or, you know, I mean, people, you get opinions. And now there's an iPhone app out that connects to the site that does this. So you're able to go, like, say you're at your local place where you buy clothes, you take a picture of this, and you upload it, and you pretty much get almost instant critique. And you think to yourself,
you think it'd be mean, though, like really nasty.
You'd think, why would somebody do this to themselves?
I like the shirt, but the face isn't very nice.
Yeah, you ever get your teeth fixed? Or, you know, I mean, you would think that that would happen, but when I went to the site, surprisingly, it's not really happening. I mean, I'm sure it does. I mean, how can it not? But it's like it isn't really happening. And then when you really think about it, it's like if you're going to wear some kind of clothes and you want an opinion, it's probably good to get an opinion from somebody who doesn't care what you think. I mean, if you ask your friend, hey, how does this shirt look? And they say, oh, you look good in it.
You know? Always look good in everything.
And it's like, well, you're not really, you know, it's like asking your mom, you know, you're not really getting unbiased feedback. And here you actually, with this mobile app, you're able to take a picture of, you know, the shoes you just tried on and then get instant critique, people
This is nice. This fills in a little hole I have with Miles. So Miles is extremely honest about things, right? So if I said, you know, what do you think of the shirt? He'd say his honest opinion. The problem is he has no fashion opinion. Wouldn't you say that, Miles? It's like I could use him for this perfectly. I'd be like, come shopping with me. He'd be like, why?
and you know, I also noticed there's men and women using this service. It wasn't just women. I mean, I would normally think, oh, this is something
I'm start
for
using
girls,
it.
You know. But, you know,
I'm going to start using, but if you see me on that site, you don't respond because I don't want to be my feelings hurt for my friends.
But interesting, though, you know.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Fascism, an app that helps you decide on your clothing. All right. Let's go ahead and go to lovely Aptos, California, shall we?
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Elizabeth. What's your question today?
My Macintosh seems very ill, and I don't know what's wrong or what to do.
Have you been feeding it soup, chicken soup?
No, I haven't tried that.
Okay, so what's the problem?
I have a lot of problems. Probably almost maybe a year. There's three different things. I'm going to start where it started. Seems like Entourage has not been working properly for quite a while. Like when I try to,
you have an old machine, don't you?
No, I don't actually.
And you're using Entourage?
Well, you can use Entourage if you want. I mean, you have Microsoft Office. It installs Entourage. You're like, oh, that must be my mail client. And Entourage, I know a lot of people on Macs use it. It's like the equivalent of Outlook on the Mac.
Yeah, but if you've got an Intel machine, you're using an older Entourage, it's going to be a lot slower. Yeah. Are you okay, so go on. Entourage doesn't work really well. What's the next symptom?
Okay, the other thing is for several months now, when I try to load any website on either Safari or
Firefox.
It takes like three tries. Like it's, you can imagine how fun it is using the computer. It's not working properly.
Are you always in the same place when you do this, or is it slow when you go to a coffee shop, or is it only slow at your house?
I've actually tried it like at Next Space or something. Same problem.
Do you have a laptop? What kind of computer do you have?
I have a MacBook.
Is it silver or white or black?
It's white.
White. Okay.
How old is it?
I think it's 2 years old.
Okay.
And I'm running OS X 10.5.8.
Leopard? Okay. That's not Soul Leopard, I don't think.
No. Mm-hmm. Okay, next problem?
And the third problem, which just cropped up in the last couple of weeks, is that when I do a lot of photos, when I do photos in preview now, just to enhance the color a little tiny bit, it used to work just to make it prettier. The last couple of weeks, whenever I use that, it just makes like red streaks through it. So it's now it's having that
just
problem.
Just the image?
What's that?
Just the image of the photo or the entire screen?
The photo image.
Okay. Okay, we have enough. Just hold with us. We're going to chat for a little bit.
Oh, there is.
All right, we have enough at this point. I know what Miles is thinking, and I'm thinking the same thing. Ben, what are you thinking?
I'm hungry.
Al?
Robots.
Yeah. Yeah. Graphics card issue?
What's that?
Graphics card issue?
That's good. No.
Not enough. Could it be amount of RAM?
Not amount of RAM. Miles, what do you think?
Mismatched.
Miles? You don't think it's bad RAM? Come on. Be with me on this one. No, what do you think it is? You'd have no opinion. I'm just going to take your mic down and finish the sentence for you.
The fact that it's that she's seeing a network issue that's delayed mm-hmm. seems significant to me. So yeah. That's...
Oh, and I've cleaned out the caches.
Caches, PRAM and all that.
I'm thinking it's a hardware problem. I think it's a hardware problem. The line showing up in the image when you process an image, that's really problematic. Like, that shouldn't happen. That means you've got something in your processor chain, if you will, that's actually miscalculating. That's my guess. So the things that could be possible, I mean, the things that, you know, hardware that goes bad on a computer, it goes in this order. The hard drive, then the RAM, then something else. Mm-hmm. And the optical drive's in there too, but that's early on and it's not nearly as important. I would go with taking this into a shop and having them check out what it is. But are there tools for checking your RAM still on a Mac?
Well, I assume you've repaired permissions and done all that stuff, done the first aid stuff, right?
I did do that, yeah. And okay. Then I was looking. Someone told me, oh, Malwarebytes is great for my Mac, and I looked that up.
What's it called?
Doesn't seem to work on Macs. It's not Malwarebytes.
Yeah, that's you know.
Well, I think it's called Mac Tools Pro or Mac. There is a program that will test your.
Viruses, but I don't think that's...
Yeah, no, it's not a virus.
Okay.
No, I mean, I really think because your machine's doing off really slow communication stuff, there's something strange there. But the image being manipulated and coming back with strange lines in it, just that's very odd.
Okay, right off the bat, if you haven't already...
Back up your data.
Don't do anything until you back up.
Yes.
Okay, so...
And do you have a copy of your data? Like right now, if your computer just stolen, what would you be sad or would you be okay?
And I also, my spouse backs up.
Okay, now one thing about Time Machine, I had a friend do this recently, a friend of Al and mine. He was doing Time Machine fine, but the problem was his hard drive was failing, and Time Machine was always failing, and he just never knew it.
Well, it's interesting because I get messages a lot that Time Machine's not working, but then it seems to be in there working.
Don't ignore those messages.
Okay.
That's a problem.
Yeah, double check.
Oh, unless you're getting a problem and say, we're running out of space, we're deleting old data. That's okay.
You know, I did find that application that checks your hardware and RAM and all that kind of stuff. It's called, it's by Micromat, and it's called Tech Tool Pro.
Oh, Tech Tool Pro, sure.
Yeah,
that's
and it goes through and checks. I've used this. As a matter of fact, I have it. I've used it on my machine, too, when I run into problems. And it'll actually test your video. It'll test your RAM. A lot of times you have a bad RAM chip.
Yeah.
And this thing goes through and tests all of these things. Now, it is commercial software. But, it's a diagnostic and repair software, and it's really, really easy to use. I mean, it's not like you got to be a geek to know how to use this thing. It's really...
And repairs problems.
Yeah, the issue with this is that this app is like close to $100, right around there, right?
Yeah.
And you could also go to a shop, and most shops will run this, and they'll have like a base fee for it, right? And it will probably be more like in the $30 thing. So you could take your machine, and since it's a laptop, it's easy to move, you could take it in and do like a third the price of this app. Of course, every time you have a problem, you'd have to spend that money.
I see.
But that would be at least, you know, if they go, well, we checked it and it's RAM, you can pretty much trust that it's probably RAM, and you're good to go, just get new RAM.
I'll post a link to the Tech Tool Pro in our forums for after the show, so you can just look.
On the website, on the current show page.
There's also the Apple hardware test, and that's free, and you can run that for free. It's not as comprehensive as Tech Tool Pro, but it's definitely
something. How do you get that? Can you link to that?
Yeah, I can link to that. There's okay, so we'll have these knowledge base article.
Thank you. We'll have these links up on the GeekSpeak website for today's show, and of course today is the 18th of September 2010. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, Elizabeth.
Bye.
Elizabeth didn't answer any of our questions. I'm so sad.
That's only fair. I don't think we really answered any of hers.
We never answer anybody's questions. All right, Duell, it's kind of Miles' turn because the geek bit, but it's kind of also Ben's turn. Okay, Ben, quickly, tell us about something about math.
Yeah, okay, cool. So Yahoo, or sorry, someone from the tech firm Yahoo just calculated pi to, anyone have a wager, I guess?
We
were at 2.7 trillion last time. This was only a couple weeks ago I covered this story. No, not 3 trillion.
No, 3 trillion.
2 quadrillion.
Wow.
Digits. Calculated pi to 2 quadrillion digits. And he said that when you express pi in binary, the 2 quadrillionth digit is 0. Great knowledge, you know, for when you're
hanging out with your friends.
You I could actually them. Say any arbitrary digit is a 1 or I mean, zero. Like, I could say 1, and I'd be 50% chance of being right anyway. So.
In binary, certainly.
And the more affirmative you felt to your conviction, the more we'd believe you anyway.
Now,
thank you very much for that wonderful story about pi.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. How many machines did it take them to do that? How did you do it?
It took them 23 days on only 1,000 machines.
That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Only 1,000.
That's a big rush.
Well, I mean, compared to you know, last time it was like they calculate for 10 years and then they find that someone's already...
Okay, so is it just a sign of my geekiness that I kind of want to know how you do that, how you split your task up between multiple
machines? They have a form... So, yeah, how do you do that with pi, right? You kind of have to keep going down and dialing, you know, getting down into pi with one process, right? With one formula or something, but they actually have a formula which turns an infinite sum into a calculation of single terms.
You can say
hey, what's the 1.235 billionth digit of pi, go, and it'll tell you, oh, that's a one or that's a zero. Now the one thing I'm not clear about is it 2 quadrillionth digit in binary or in you know, 0 through 9 and 10 base 10.
No, they'd be talking.
It's got to be
10,
base 10,
right.
But
that'd be a metric.
But they said that the 2 quadrillionth digit in binary is 0.
Well, that's fine.
So I don't know. I mean, so it's also a BBC article and it's a popular science written article. So it was a little bit scant on the details, but
how do you pronounce the guy's name that figured that out?
Yeah, I was kind of avoiding it. Nicholas. Z, S Z E.
His last name is S Z E.
She, yeah, maybe she.
Z
Z
Z
Z.
So, right. If anyone knows how to pronounce that,
yes.
We have 3 questions.
Right, yeah,
that's my question.
Something that was brought up was how do you calculate pi, and you actually learn this in the second course of calculus. It's an integral along with
of
an
what?
Infinite
integral of what?
Sorry,
it's an integral of what?
I'd have to go back and look at my calculus book.
It's like the probability of a point landing within a circle within a square or something like that.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's this curious thing where you take an integral and you get this answer, but the answer is adding on another integral, and so you have to calculate that integral, and you keep going and going and going and going. And the more you do the process, the closer you get, the more digits you get.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you have to decide, like, okay, do I really want to keep calculating this?
Yeah, when do you hit the stop button on your computer?
Show page, what do you think? Diamonds and pie? I think that might be the right topic.
Diamonds and pie.
All right. We're always looking for titles for shows, so if you think of something funny and clever, let us know. We need help, of course, on that. Mr. Miles Elam, I believe it's your turn. What's going on with the...
The first sale doctrine states that after someone sells you an item, that...
I want that Apple. Here is $10.
Yeah, the first sale is complete, and they have no longer any rights over it. You can resell that item.
Or do anything I want with it.
Do anything you want.
So with our Apple discussion, I could take that Apple and I could smash it into the ground with my foot. And you have no recourse because you gave your right away to it.
Well, not just that. This is with regard to sales. So if you buy a shovel from Lowe's, later on, even if you use it or not, or if you engrave something in it or whatever, you can resell that shovel on eBay
or
Craigslist or to your next door neighbor, and Lowe's cannot take a cut, and the original manufacturer, you know, a Craftsman, can't take a cut. So
it's a basic fundamental capitalistic rule, if you will. Okay, go on.
And in fact, in 2008, there was a decision from a guy who bought AutoCAD, a professional level drafting program. And Autodesk sued them going, no, you can't sell that again. He's like, why not? It's supposed to be a license for use on a single computer. I removed it from my computer. And so
and now I can sell
it. Don't have anything else. So here's this disk. It has this information in there. And
he won that case.
And he won that case. However, the Ninth Circuit Court has stated very recently that the first sale doctrine is unavailable to those who are only licensed to use the copies of their copyrighted works.
Okay.
Meaning that if you buy some software, it doesn't matter that you have deleted all copies off of any computer that you would have. You cannot resell that software.
Hmm.
You cannot resell a license, which is very curious because even though this is saying this applies to software, we were having a discussion about this last week. If you have a CD, that CD doesn't care what data is on it.
Right.
That CD could be AutoCAD or it could be Outcast.
Bork. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so if you cannot resell something because you only have a license,
mm-hmm.
that court decision would seem to go along with you can't sell used CDs.
Okay. Like, okay. So if it's just a license, the thing
audio
is...
audio CD, music
CDs. So what you're saying basically is software manufacturers are not actually selling something. They're selling a use of something.
Right.
They're selling you a lease to use something, a service almost. That's right?
That's the idea.
That's the idea
behind selling
it.
You a license to
and
use.
So this was held up,
it.
Even though that's contrary to court precedent, because the precedent has to do with this AutoCAD sell, and that, of course, is selling something. So this has changed. This is kind of drastic. I mean, don't you think? I mean, it seems a little...
It does. I mean, it's going to kill a lot of businesses on eBay because a lot of people resell. But when you think about it, a lot of software, you are able to download the whole software. You go to
for
the
free.
Website, it's free. And then if you want, and it runs for like 30 days or whatever,
right.
and then it turns off. If you want, you can buy the license. So you are, the
sure
software
the
isn't the thing that you're buying.
Yeah.
You're buying the license. So you might be able to give that same file that you downloaded free to somebody, but that license that you bought... I mean, I think they're trying to make that distinction between there.
I see
there.
The distinction. I do see the distinction.
And when you buy a physical item,
but the question
then
is
it feels more tangible.
Now, the question is if you went ahead and bought the master suite of Adobe software mm-hmm. and then you wanted to sell it to somebody, you'd actually not – the software is not important. I can go download the software. You'd mm-hmm. want to sell that number to me.
Right.
That's
the, it's the number because you can get the software.
So, then
so
what this court is saying is you don't have the right to sell that number to me. Even though you own that number, you don't have the right to sell it to me because it's licensed
you
to you only.
But that's the thing though. You don't own the number. You are licensed to use that number, which is a different concept. Mm. And I think socially, it's a little worrisome.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
Geeks Beyond KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. All the information we talk about on GeekSpeak is available at geekspeak.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. Al.
Yes.
What's the crazy USB of the week?
Oh, yeah. This one is really crazy because it's called the USB Itching Removal Instrument. Okay. And I don't really understand why it's USB because it looks like it has batteries in it. And it does have a USB plug. So maybe it charges it. It doesn't say. It says basically you put this thing when you have an itch and you put it on the itch and then you turn it on and then it relieves the itch.
So it's an itch reliever.
Well, no, it removes the itch.
Removes the itch.
I mean, I've actually, you're not going to believe this, but I've actually done this with my fingers.
How did you remove an itch?
I've curved my fingers around so that the nail portion of my finger is in contact with my skin, and I've moved it back and forth.
So you're talking, I think the technical term, let me repeat that. That's called a scratch. It's
yes.
called scratch.
Yes, I've learned the art of scratching. And if you don't know how to do that, you can get one of these USB removal instruments. It's totally very strange. And the one thing that's interesting, it says right in here, it says all kinds of people use this.
All kinds.
All kinds. So, you know, I don't know what kind of people, don't
so
use
So let me ask you this,
all
Al.
Kinds.
Do you take this device and you rub it on the itch?
No, that's what I was wondering. But you're just supposed to just, if you don't really want to do the rubbing part, you just set it on there. It's a real item.
You can learn about it on geekspeak.org.
Yes.